Auckland's Radio.
Now, in the studio, we have Renita De Silva. Good morning.
Hi. Hi. Nice to be here. Really happy to be here, Dave.
Yeah. Great. Now, your new book is called The Stolen Girl. I'll just read out the advert for this. How far would you go to protect your child? A mother's love, a long-buried secret, the search for the truth. For as long as 13-year-old Daya can remember, it's always been just her and her mum, Vanny. Despite never staying in one place long enough to call it home, with her mother by her side, Daya has never needed anyone else. Then, in an instant, Daya's fragile world is shattered. Her mother is arrested, accused of abducting Daya when she was a baby. It's a fascinating book to read, very gripping. What was it that inspired you to write this, Renita?
All my stories start as pictures in my head. So this one, it was this 13-year-old girl. She's running up the stairs. She's thinking about, you know, she's just broken up for the half term. So she's thinking what she'll do in the half term. She's just had a row with her mum. So she's thinking, she has all these normal teenage concerns in her head. And then she's running up the stairs to her flat. Then she comes to a standstill in front of the door of her flat, because what she sees changes her world forever in that instant, because her mum is standing in front of the door to her flat. And she's surrounded, ambushed by a semicircle of policemen. So, and her mum, she catches her mum's eye, and her mum is facing her, but the policemen are facing her mum. And her mum looks at her, and then she looks away. Her face is blanched, clear of expression, and she just closes her eyes and sways on her feet. So this was the picture that came in my head, this 13-year-old girl.
Wow.
Who sees her mum being arrested, and between starting from the from the ground floor, coming up to the third floor where her flat is, her whole life, what she has believed so far, is changed in an instant, because she hears the policeman saying, "We are arresting you for kidnapping a child," and she cannot believe it. She cannot equate that child with herself, you know. And I thought, everybody, I think we all take our parents for granted. You know, we just think, she's my mom. You don't think to question this very basic fact. And in this case, that's what happened. So that grew in my head. And I thought, why? What happened? And I just supplied all the backstory. And that's where it started from. So
that's a really vivid sort of explosive image in your head. And then you created all the story and everything that goes with that.
Yes, I think all my books start that way. They start with one picture, and then over time they get embellished with detail, and the characters start to have their own voices, and they start to, you know, become very vocal in my head. So,
The way you write, where you're telling the story from the point of view of the girl Daya and her mother Vanny, and the third person in this, Artie, who claims to be the biological mother. I found it fascinating the way you change from one to the other, and we get the three different, completely different emotional perspectives on what's going on.
Yes. I like writing books from different alternating narratives, because I think what fascinates me about writing is what fascinates me is people, how we try to do our best, and sometimes we make choices based on, we think this is the best thing I can do in the situation, you know, and then later on you suddenly realize that it was the worst possible thing you could have done in retrospect. So that fascinates me. So I like to write from all different, because you make one choice and it isn't just you, it affects everyone around you, and I want to see how it's like an earthquake or a tsunami, you know, the aftershocks, how they affect different people and their take on the situation. So I wanted to show all that, I think.
Well, it works really well in this book. It's very emotionally gripping.
Thank you.
The three different perspectives. What was it that made you take up writing in the first place, Renita?
My father got me, I had just started to read when I was six, and then my father got me these first books, the first books I ever owned. They were beautiful Andersen and Grimm fairy tales. And I remember I grew up in India, and it was a very hot day. The air was shimmering, you know, with humidity.
Yeah.
The sky was wearing a frown of clouds, so we knew that any minute now it's going to rain, you know. But I was lost. I took the books. I ran to my favorite. I had a favorite spot under the mango tree. So I went and sat there, and the bees were buzzing, and there was the smell of, you know, fruit, ripening fruit. But I forgot everything and I lost myself in stories. I realized that I could be anybody. I could be the princess. I could put all the people I didn't like as the, you know, naughty stepmother and everything. I was the controller of my own destiny for a change, you know, for a child. This was, you know, once I lost myself in the world of stories, I couldn't come back. So it was just, and then I went to the library, local library, but there weren't enough books in, or there were books, but they had, most of the time they had the last pages or the first, last pages missing, which annoyed me because you get so into the character story and then the ending is gone. So I started making up my own endings and it started from there. So I have to thank that ramshackle old library in my hometown, which had books with pages missing, because that's how I started creating stories. So, yes.
Wow. you paint real sort of huge dramatic images, don't you?
I think they come in my head. What I do is these images in my head, I want to paint them, but I can't draw to save my life. So I try to paint them with words, you know. And if when reading back what I've written, if it matches the image in my head, most of the time it doesn't come close. But sometimes if it comes slightly close, I'm happy because I'm still trying for, I think that is my aim as a writer, for it one day to match what I'm actually seeing in my head. It hasn't come close so far. So.
Wow. You're so full of energy and enthusiasm as a person, and it comes through in your stories as well. I think that makes them really gripping.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I love stories. So I love, I grow roots in a bookshop and then I have to be dragged away. When we go to the town center, a meeting point is a bookshop because mom never moves from the bookshop. So the kids have to come and find me. They go to all the different shops and then they come and find me and they
The bookshop.
Yes, they know where I'll be. So our meeting point is the bookshop. So they have to drag me. Come on, mom. They have learned now. They just go and sit in the corner with the book because I won't move until I've gone through all the latest books and read all the blurbs, you know. So,
wow.
Yes.
You've got two other books out as well, haven't you? Tell us about those, please.
Monsoon Memories was my debut. So that was, I started writing that in the winter. So we had moved here, I think it was, and it was cold here. In the winters here, when I'm, you know, cold and gloomy and I'm missing home, I take out a memory from my head, you know, and it warms me up. And I thought, what if this woman couldn't do that. She has moved to the UK. She's from, you know, she grew up in India. She moved to the UK. She's living here. But she cannot even escape in her head back home. She can't go home because of something that happened in her past. And she cannot escape even, she doesn't even have the solace of accessing her memories because something happened and because of that she cannot go back. So Shirin was born. So she's my protagonist of Monsoon Memories.
Yeah.
And then there's an alternating narrative. There's this little girl. I like writing about children because writing from the point of view of children, because they see everything that goes on, but they don't really get the big picture. They see everything, but it's only later on when they are older that it all sort of makes sense in their head. So she discovers this photograph. She recognizes her mum, her dad, and her sis aunt. But she doesn't know who the third person in the picture is. So she starts to dig up, you know. She thinks, oh, I'm a detective. I'm going to find out this mystery, uncover this mystery. But she doesn't realize that in doing so, she's unearthing a conspiracy which is going to change her life. So she has to grow up all of a sudden. It's she has to realize that the adults are not the perfect people she thought them to be. So that is Monsoon Memories. It's alternating narratives between the two, for Shirin and Rina. My Forgotten Daughter is the story of the Forgotten is three different women. This one is based on themes of identity and journeys. So Nisha discovers in her parents' will that she has been adopted. So from India, she has never been to India. So for her, it's a journey of discovering herself, finding her roots. And then there is Devi, who has grown up in India, but she's rebelling against the constraints of her culture. So, and her mother's love, possessive, she feels it's too possessive. So for her, it's a journey of reconciliation with her mom. And then there's Shilpa's story. Shilpa has made choices, which at the time she thought were the best. But then in retrospect, they turned out to be perhaps not as good as she thought. So she has to come to terms with her choices. So that's The Forgotten Daughter. So those are my first two books, yes.
Wow. Do you have lots more books in your head as well?
I do.
Lots more of these images.
Yeah, I have lots of ideas. So whether they will, grow into stories, we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Wow. So how do people get hold of your books then?
They are available on Amazon, bookstores online. You can get a paper copy or you can get them in ebook format. They are available at Waterstones, W.S. Smith Online, and Amazon, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, and all the good bookstores. Yes.
So, good.
Yes.
I bet there's a lot of people out there thinking, I wish I could sit down and write a book as well. Maybe they've got ideas in their head, or maybe they just love to write something. Is there any advice you give to a prospective author?
Yes, I would say just don't give up, because many times, I think it's the rejection which gets you down, which makes you lose confidence. For a budding author, your confidence is fragile as it is. Want to write, but you think, is it good enough? It's a big leap to from writing it for yourself to sending it out to people. And many times, you are rejected, but it may not be because of your writing. It might be because you sent it to the wrong. Maybe they are not publishing in your genre or something. So what I want to say, and also to remember that even the best authors get rejected. So please don't give up. It's never been a better time to get published, because there's ebooks, there's independent publishers. You can self-publish. Please, if you have a story, write it. And then also don't listen to people who say, like when I started to write, they said, oh, I think the Indian fiction market is saturated. And it was my story and I wanted to tell it. I didn't even think about markets or anything. I just wanted to tell my story. So just write your story. They say that there are only 7 plots in and it's your take. It's your, how you own your story that makes it yours. So just write it and send it off and just keep going. That's what I want. In a very roundabout way, don't give up. Just keep
don't
going.
Give up. Going back to that book, The Stolen Girl, is out the 12th of September.
12th of September. 12th of September. Yes. Yeah.
And it's going to be electronic and paperback versions.
Yes. Yeah.
One thing I did notice in there is the theme of food.
Yes.
And the effect of an emotional situation on whether someone overeats or undereats.
Yes.
And so on.
Yeah.
So that was important to you in some way.
Yes, I think readers of my books, previous books, will see that food plays a very prominent part in all of my books. I think. I was brought up, our culture, where I was brought up, my village and everything, food, there's no problem that you cannot solve with a plate of food. So if you're sad, they give you food. If you're happy, they give you food. And, come eat. So that is that every time you go anywhere, you are fed. Even though there is not enough food to go around, you still are shared. You share the food, on your plate. So with this book, I think the other two, there was food. There was plenty of food. But in this one, I wanted to make a point as well, because the food is a metaphor for what is going on in Diya's and Aarti's lives. So with Diya, food is her comfort. Everything is changing. Her mother, they keep moving from place to place every 6 months. So her mother is her constant, and she's bullied because of her weight. So I wanted to, I think us as a society, we are obsessed with image. Image is intricately connected with food consumption, especially with girls, I find. I work in part-time in my daughter's school, and I get children as young as 8 or 9, little girls coming to me crying, saying, oh, they teased me because I'm fat. Have I put on, am I fat? And all this, it's there. So I wanted to bring it in, and how for a little girl, her self-worth is so important. It's so fragile and it's so important. It's growing, it's developing. And it's somehow connected with how she looks, and that is connected with food. And I find that everyone has their own relationship, love-hate sort of relationship with food. So I wanted to bring that in. For Diya, it's comfort. And for Aarti, it is she writes everything down in her food diary.
It's about control, is it?
It is about control. She thinks that she can control her life by writing down her control. She feels like she's doing something by writing down meticulously what she has eaten every day. She feels at least that's one thing of her empty life that she can control, that she has control over. So I wanted to bring in people's relationship with food. I think it's a very personal thing. We all have a struggle with it. I think I love food and I've always have this love-hate relationship with food as well. So I wanted to I think everybody, I've since found that everybody has some sort of relationship with food, and I wanted to bring that in. And how it, with Aarti, I think it's a metaphor for her empty life, the emptiness in between. She says in one of her entries that between the breakfast, lunch and dinner, what is not said that speaks more eloquently than what is said in the food diary, you know. Yeah. It's all the gaps in between, the emptiness. So, yes.
These characters come across as being absolutely real to you.
They are. They are in, I think sometimes they're more real than the people I meet. They live in my head. They nag at me to tell their story. I get up in the night sometimes because they are telling me, oh no, you shouldn't have done that. You should have done this. I wouldn't do that, they tell me. So then wow. I have to go downstairs and quickly open up the computer and change what I have written. So yes, they live in my head and they populate my head and they nag at me. Yeah.
Wow. Now, if people want to contact you, what's the best way to do that?
I am accessible by my website, which is renitadesilva.com.
Yeah.
It's our, and then I'm also available on Facebook, which is Renita De Silva Books.
Email address?
Email address, sorry.
On
yes,
your
yes, it's renitadesilvabooks@gmail.com. But if you go to my website, if you renitadesilva.com, it has all my contact details. Yeah.
Charlie Good. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating talking with you, Renita, and listening to this interview, you can tell Renita is so full of energy and enthusiasm, and her stories are the same thing, so do read it. Absolutely brilliant. So the new one is The Stolen Girl by Renita De Silva, and that's out in 12th of September.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. It's been wonderful being here. Thank you. Brooklyn's Radio.